Welcome to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and today is Friday the 10th. It is 10 past 8 Irish summer time. Well, this has been an exciting week. Of course, this being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes, and I'll just start with a recap of what we've seen this week. In stock markets, it has been at the very least exciting and at the worst absolutely traumatizing. We started off the week with some chunky declines, and then we had a very significant rally. And it did look like for a while, probably on Wednesday, it looked like we were going to close out the week on key day reversals for a number of markets. But that wasn't to be, and we've had some really rather large declines over the last 2 days. And that just points towards that we are in a medium-term correction and that it is just not over yet. Although there are some encouraging signs that we may be close to the end, although not at the end. At the bond markets, bonds had a reasonably good rally, gave some of it up, and have taken some of it back again, but not anywhere close to the same kind of moves that we've seen in the equity markets. There has been a bit of a flight to quality, but not anything like the kind of moves that we've seen in equity markets. What we have seen is the JGBs, which had been in a little short-term range, break upwards today, rather large move, and that's probably the one that's most noteworthy. Looking at some of the other asset classes, in the commodity markets, the industrial metal complex got sold off pretty heavily over the last couple of days. Nickel still looking for a bottom. It was down more than 1,000 points today, but it's coming close to that 25,000 level, which is probably almost 50% retracement, or perhaps just a little bit more. Lead also below that 3,000 level, coming down certainly more slowly than it went up, but hasn't found a bottom there yet either. And tin, which had been really quite strong, has fallen below that 16,000 level. Downward dynamic today, down 850 points, so broken the integrity of that short-term uptrend there. And looking at the precious metals, gold has been up and down this week, but it's closing out the week well up on the day. It's up nearly $11 on the spot price, but it's almost completely countermanding that downward dynamic that we saw yesterday as it continues to consolidate underneath this $700 level. You'll need to look at the weekly chart, and preferably even longer than that, to really appreciate this consolidation. I looked at the monthly, and that's why I posted it today, because when you look at that monthly chart, it looks like nothing more than a consolidation prior to this breaking upwards once more. But I think it's going to be a game of patience, and the cautious investor would wait until it breaks above 700, although there is an understandable temptation to buy it at lower levels. But it will remain volatile as long as this medium-term correction in stock and bond markets or credit markets continues. Then, looking at the currency markets, this has been a week where the dollar rallied a little bit in here. In fact, even today it had rallied rather significantly, but gave some of that up again. And it just doesn't look like the dollar has got any legs in here. What it continues to look like is that the dollar index has fallen down to that 80 level, which it has been to a number of times over the last 20 years. On every other occasion, it has rallied significantly. There have been big upward dynamics that have given us an absolutely clear cut signal that it's found support in this area. We haven't seen that yet. It's ranging around this level, and without that upward dynamic, the odds are very much biased towards it breaking down once more. Now, that's pretty much what we've seen over the last week. But let's look at some of these larger themes. The most important is really what's happening in the US markets right now. Now, we've said for in excess of 3 years, probably nearly 5 years, that Wall Street was in a bear market in terms of earnings or valuations. Now, that's not to be misconstrued with a bear market in prices, because obviously Wall Street, the Dow Jones, the S&P have moved to new highs over the last couple of months, and they've retraced their entire loss following the Nasdaq crash on 9/11. But we define a bear market in terms of valuations as a generational-long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And that has certainly been the case. While over the last couple of years, PEs have expanded, they are well below where they were at the bubble peak, and there is certainly the possibility that they will go lower. Probably the most important chart out there to put into perspective the change of cycles that we've seen is the Dow Gold ratio, because over the last 100 years, that has had three important spikes, which have coincided with three really big equity bull markets. And the way to look at that is that while Wall Street can continue to make new highs, and while that looks like a distant memory considering the emotional trauma that investors have gone through over the last couple of weeks, it's not beyond the bounds possibility that these will rally up once more once this medium-term correction ends. But the chances are that over the long term, we will see gold and other resources outperform equity markets on the upside because we have entered a new cycle. That's not to say, of course, that we won't have very good returns from equity markets, and of course, some equity markets will do enormously better than others. But the chances are that we're going to see Wall Street lagging. At the moment, we are seeing, for example, right now the S&P is down 6 points, and the FTSE 100 closed down 3.71%, 232 points. We definitely are still within the Wall Street leash effect. And the Wall Street leash effect is when the US is steady to rising, it allows other markets to expand because liquidity is unleashed and finds its way into a number of other markets. And the majority of markets are high beta with regard to Wall Street. However, when Wall Street is contracting, as is the case right now, those markets that had been pushed up or floated up on the sea of liquidity get pulled back rather sharply. And that's why we've seen the European indices, which have always been high beta to the US, pulling back much more sharply. And a number of those have made new lows while the S&P has failed to, although the Dow Jones made a new low intraday and is well off the lows right now. When I started recording, in fact, it was down 130 points and it's now down 80. So that's a further significant rally off the lows. But this is important because while the US was pretty steady, all those other markets were able to expand. And the US will be steady once more. This is certainly not the, I don't believe that this is the end of the 4-year bull market. I believe that this still has further to go, but that we're in a medium-term correction right now. And there is some evidence that it may be coming towards an end, but it's unlikely that we're at the end right now. We've seen a number of markets make important lows, and we've seen a number of markets go through those lows, so it's certainly not over just yet. What we need to see is a support building phase, and that will entail where a market finds a bottom, rallies from there, consolidates for a while, perhaps comes back and tests the low but consolidates above the low, and then moves on to make another higher low. So once we have a couple of higher lows and perhaps a couple of higher highs, then we can say with a higher degree of confidence that we've found an important low in the market. But that's not the case right now. We could well see some further selling pressure. But given the fact that the S&P is holding above those recent lows, I am willing to take that as a reasonably good signal. Now, of course, that would be completely countermanded if it falls straight through those recent lows next week. But at the moment, The S&P is holding pretty steady. And the fact that you've seen so many of these banking shares, and the bank shares often lead, and they definitely led in this on this occasion because they topped out well in advance of the broader markets, and a number of those markets have, of those banking indexes, have started to outperform relative to their broader or their wider market indices. And that's important because, given the fact that they have led the market on the downside, they could well lead on the upside. But of course, there is a lag here, and since it was up to 6 to 7 weeks before the wider market caught on to the banks outperforming, it could easily be that, but I would be surprised if it is, because everyone is concentrating on the banking sector right now. And the fact that they have started to turn to outperformance will not go unmissed. So I think the wider market will pick that up much quicker on this occasion. Of course, we've only had the banks outperforming for about 3 days, and that's not very long. So if they fall through those lows, and you can create any of the charts that I posted in comment of the day today using the charting function on in the chart library. And incidentally, I've been corresponding quite a lot with our IT people, and they are in the process of creating a number of new functions right now. So we've got the programming time, and we've got the programmers actually on the job. So it will be in the next couple of months that you'll see some really impressive, well, I think that they're very impressive, additions to the chart library. But getting back to the banking shares, as long as they hold above those recent lows relative to those overall indices, that's a very good signal that we're at least relatively close to a bottom. And when the US moves to outperformance once again, or sorry, starts to move upwards once again, those markets that have been hit hard, and those ones that have a very, very good fundamental story, like many in Asia, are probably the ones that are going to rally first and are going to rally the most. So it's going to be important to really keep an eye on those important markets that have the enormous growth potential. Our big long-term themes are supply inelasticity meets rising demand and emerging Asia. And emerging Asia is important right now because this correction is setting us up for another good buying opportunity. We haven't seen the type of major pullback that we saw in May, June last year, and we may yet see that. So, I mean, at that time, India fell more than a third, and it certainly hasn't given that up right now. But we are being set up for a good buying opportunity. It'll probably be the best buying opportunity of this year. And it's certainly one that we will be watching out for once these equity markets bottom. When you have something like 5 billion people in the emerging world, a billion in India, a billion in China, and about another billion in the rest of Asia, perhaps even more than that, who aspire to our standard of living in the West and are working towards that with absolute fervor, and have every intention of attaining it. It means that, and of course, one of the other massively important points is that they have enormously young populations. So young people tend to be the most productive workers, and they tend to be the people who, when they are first-time buyers, buy their first car, buy their first motorcycle, are the drivers of emerging economies. And India in particular has a massive young population, which is in need of massive infrastructure, which feeds through into the supply and elasticity theme. But given the potential for India and China to grow, and for their economies to grow over the next couple of decades, the potential for PE ratio expansion and for the expansion of their stock markets is practically unprecedented. When you had the Asian tigers expanding at unbelievable rates, they were relatively small, but when you talk about China or India, you're talking about massive percentages of the global population entering the middle classes. And that will have massive effects on not only the equity markets, but on the commodity markets, because as people need jobs and need homes and indeed food and commodities, their per capita consumption of all commodities goes up. And we've never seen anything like this before. This is the greatest urbanization in the history of the world, and it's probably a once-off event. So that is the supply side of the equation. That means that the equity markets of emerging Asia are going to continue to be the growth leaders in the world. And while they are still tied through the leash effect to Wall Street, that leash effect will probably become less important over time. And indeed, we've seen that China in this reaction hasn't blinked at all. Now, of course, that is also because there are very, very few international investors invested in that market. But at the same time, no one has been scared in the Chinese market. And the growth of the Chinese economy and the importance of the Chinese economy to its neighbors is not to go without mention. Because as time goes by, people will look more towards their regional superpower or heavyweight, and the gravitational pull of markets like China and India will have a greater importance than Wall Street. That is certainly not the case today to any great extent, but it is an increasing thing. Now, sorry, my phone just rang. I'm just turning that off. Excuse me. And just one moment. Sorry. So that is certainly an important factor. Now that we've covered the supply side of the commodity bull market, but there is also, sorry, the demand side, that we need to cover the supply side, because we've been through a bear market of nearly 20 years in industrial metals. And that ended nearly 5 years ago. At the moment, we're going through a consolidation for many of the commodities that led that initial move. So oil has moved right up towards its highs, and it's pulled back just now. And the chances are that we're going to see a bit of a consolidation around here. And the industrial metals had one by one accelerated on the upside. But we are going through a little period, a period of consolidation right now. That is not to say that this market is over. With the infrastructure plans that are going on in the emerging world, there is going to be higher per capita consumption and higher nominal consumption right now of industrial metals and energy resources going forward. And that going forward has no full stop at the end of it, because with the world economy due to, or the world population due to grow to 8 billion people by 2020, that is another swathe of young people who will be looking for all of the creature comforts that we enjoy today. So that's one important factor. Of course, there is also the food element, because as people's diet tends, or as they become more prosperous, their diets tend to improve. And with grain and a number of other soft commodity inventories being at their lowest level in literally a generation, the stage is set for a bull market in a number of these soft commodities, from corn and the grains to cocoa and coffee. But it's going to need some sort of weather-related event to get it started, and we haven't seen that just yet. But one thing that is definitely different this time is that this is the first time we've seen a soft commodity or a grains rally that has not been supply-driven. This is demand-driven. Ethanol has certainly been given the lion's share of the coverage, but we can't forget that it's also the greater per capita usage or consumption of food that is also helping to drive this market, and that will continue to drive the market long after ethanol has been substituted for something that's a little more practical to get into people's cars. But that covers really probably the biggest of our themes. The other big theme is that the bull market in bond prices ended in 2003. And when you look at those really, really long-term charts of the bond yields, and I think the best one to look at is the US 10-year yield because it has the longest history, you can see an absolutely grinding bear market in yields, bull market in prices, that has bottomed and is moving upwards from its base. It's going to be a very, very long process, but bond prices are going to come down. And that is going to have large effects both for interest rates and for the inflationary outlook. Central banks have been inflating for years, and they added more liquidity yesterday to the market. Now, it's absolutely needed, and I wouldn't criticize that move in any way, shape, or form, because I think the only thing they can do is to just add more money to the market to help stabilize it. However, it's inflationary, and they have been adding money supply to the markets at a rate 300 to 400% in excess of GDP growth for really quite a considerable time. And the more money that there is out there buying the same number of goods, it makes your value makes the value of your money less. And one of the big long-term hedges against inflation is gold. Now, gold performs best when you have an inflationary environment, but interest rates are coming down, which is possibly what we may have in the next year. But when those interest rates start to move back up as inflation becomes a sort of a page one topic, then gold won't perform as well because of rising interest rates. But with, excuse me, with bond prices coming down over the very long term and bond yields rising, and there are a number of arguments to support that, but I think the best one is just to look at the charts. We've had an incredible bull market in prices, and with yields rising, that is also going to feed through into the equity markets, where investors are going to demand higher yields. And that feeds through into my original point about the I've lost my train of thought. My original point relating to the generation long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. So, looking at the bond markets, we are currently enjoying a rally, although treasuries are marginally down on the day. But over the long term, any good rally in bond prices is going to be a good opportunity to sell them, because I can't imagine going long of treasuries in the next number of years. I will be looking for shorting opportunities when they present themselves. And of course, because of the amount of liquidity that's been pumped into the system, and liquidity has been coming in on just about every occasion, the Greenspan put has become common parlance, and perhaps the Trichet put will follow it up. But liquidity has been pouring into the system, and the very fact that Wall Street has been able to rally and make new highs is testament to the amount of liquidity that has entered the system over the last 5 or 6 years, and that's just in the last 5 or 6 years. And you can contrast that with what happened in Japan after that bubble burst, because Japan entered a deflationary spiral. Many would argue that it has failed to get out of even now, although I don't think I'm one of those people. But they squeezed and they squeezed and they squeezed, and they were very successful in killing off their real estate markets and their equity markets. And they're only starting to recover now. Personally, I think that Japan is at the beginning of a new secular bull market, although it's not performing very well right now. But I do believe that is only a matter of time. It's in that first step above the base, it's consolidating. And particularly when you look at the topics, 1800 is a big level. Whenever it breaks through that, Japan is going to be on its way, I think. But looking at the different effects of li that liquidity have had in the market, Wall Street has performed enormously well over the last 5 or 6 years, and that is directly as a result of the amount of liquidity that was pumped in following the bursting of the Nasdaq bubble and 9/11. But of course, liquidity has been coming into the system for a long time before that. You had, and not in any particular order, the Asian financial crisis, Russian debt default, long-term capital management, Y2K, and there have been other occasions where massive amounts of liquidity have entered the market. This has helped support stock markets, but in the end, it is inflationary, and that means that we are in a new inflationary environment where we can expect long-term yields to rise. In an inflationary environment, you can also look to what the dollar is going to do. Right now, the dollar is towards the lower side of its historic levels, and it has failed as of yet to rally significantly from here. Now, it has appreciated re reasonably significantly against some of the other reserve currencies like the euro and the pound and the Swiss franc, but not really to any great extent because those central banks are adding in money about as fast as they can as well to help stem the appreciation of their own currencies against the dollar. So it's sort of a competitive devaluation of the currency. Now, Asian currencies really are undervalued at the moment following the Asian financial crisis and a number of devaluations by China. You now have a situation where these currencies are under significant pressure to appreciate, and that goes right across Asia into the subcontinent of India, and you can even say the same for a number of the South American countries. A lot of those, particularly the commodity producers and the high growth economies of Asia, are under significant pressure to appreciate. And if you look at the Asian Dollar Index, I think that's ADXY in the chart library, you'll see, and you look at that over the last 10 or 20 years, 20 years preferably, you'll see that those currencies are appreciating gradually. They've broken upwards from a base, and it looks like they're going to continue to appreciate. Excuse me. Excuse me. Continue to appreciate over the next sort of 5 to 10 years, and they could easily come back towards parity with where they were before the Asian financial crisis. And that is enormously important for investors because over the long term, we expect Asia to be the growth center of the world, with Asian markets outperforming. And if you have Asian currencies also outperforming, that's an extra kick in return. And with that happy thought, following a week that has been quite traumatic, I will wish you a good weekend and thank you for your time.